Friends and family, it's me, Duncan Trussell, and I welcome you to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Take off your shoes, put them in my mouth, and sit down. Let's talk. Hello. Let's start this one off with an interesting question that popped up on the DTFH Family Forum. This post from Lucifer the Light Bearer.
I have become quite anxious lately from listening to the news too much. The Pope declaring World War III, and the recent terror attacks from ISIL. Watching the airstrikes against ISIS from the Russian warships in the Caspian Sea, the tension on the planet between humans is really increasing. Although the airstrikes against ISIL from Russia were surreal, those missiles were apocalyptic. And ISIL is becoming a perceived threat to human stability and morality. Truly, they are barbaric people. It just brings me anxiety, especially when I smoke pot. I am in the most isolated place in the world right now, but I am still a little freaked out with what's going on in the international stage. I do admire Putin, though. He seems like a real badass, and I have been loving his Twitter statements. He seems so righteous and logical with his actions. It's hard not to justify those airstrikes against ISIL territory, but still very intense stuff to watch. I'm thinking of ditching the news and getting some fresh air out in the wilderness. I don't know, shit's really intense. Is this anxiety justified and worth it?
Great post, Lucifer. Really great post. It's a great question. Is anxiety justified? Does it make sense to spend your time walking around in a state of mild anxiety or full-on fear based on the information you've been receiving from the hypnotic rectangles you keep in your pocket and on the wall of your home, maybe on your credenza? Does it make sense that we're allowing these black-screened hypno-rectangles to lull us into a strange stupor where we feel the threat of some imminent terrorist attack is right around the corner? Where we feel as though we're all being tricked by the cult of ISIS or Daesh to go to war, or that we're being somehow manipulated or seduced by some small faction of militant fundamentalist Muslims in the Middle East who are, this whole thing's planned out. They're trying to draw the armies of the world to the Middle East to cause the apocalypse, Armageddon. It's like the world is a jack-in-the-box filled with an imminent Armageddon, and the news reporters are just cranking it and cranking it, letting it play its sad, endless, cyclical song of sorrow and doom, and we sit in front of these hypno-rectangles completely lost in their patter, the rhythmic way that they report on each explosion and bomb in the Caspian Sea, and the plane shot down and the brakes are cut. You feel like you're hearing someone talk about how the brakes have been cut on the great bus of society, and we are now moving at an accelerating pace towards a cliff that is known as the apocalypse, a singularity that we're all going to go flying off of, down, down, down into the rocks and explode in a smoldering heap of ISIS flags and burnt American flags and broken bodies and the scattered scraps of the various constitutions of every country of the world blowing across the ash-burnt deserts of some nuclear wasteland that formerly was our sweet Mother Earth. Is it worth it to tune into that? Is the anxiety worth it? Is it justified? Well, I think it's justified. I think it's worth it. I think it's totally okay to allow yourself to be terrified by the news. In fact, I think it's one of the most popular forms of recreation in the world today. It's kind of a blast, is my point. What I'm getting at is that if you really analyze yourself as you're staring down at that hypno-rectangle, allowing the patter of the mainstream media to slowly lull your mind into some kind of somnambulic haze where you find yourself swiping and swiping into deeper and deeper levels of the thing until at last you find some true nugget of horror, perhaps the video of the plane being shot down over Syria that just came into day, or maybe you find some awfulness of ISIS decapitating this person or that, or some still shots of the terrible carnage left from the most recent shooting in whatever part of the world the shooting happened, and you stay there for a second, and you'll notice, if you really just watch yourself during these moments, you'll notice the really kind of embarrassing and absurd reality of the situation, which is that you are, in a weird way, getting off on it. You're enjoying it. You've made the decision to walk up to this buffet, which consists of all forms of human experience, and you've made a decision to scoop out a nice heaping bowl full of ISIS fear. Good. Fresh out of the oven. Oh, yeah. Freshly cooked up by Chef Wolf Blitzer. A nice, delicious bowl of scary words all chained together with the strange rhythmic patter of a professional reporter as he blares the doom trumpets from that hypnotic rectangle you carry around with you wherever you go. Good, delicious. You'll lick the bowl. You'll lick the terror bowl. I know I will. I'll go through. I have a whole cycle of fear sources that I go through, like a squirrel scampering through some graveyard looking to find a couple of finger bones here and there. I'll just dig around until finally I find a nice big fat nugget of fear, and then I'll rest for a little while, and then I'll dive back in until I find some more fear. And the news sources that I go to for the most fear, the hardcore fear, are drudgereport.com. Woo! If you want to get a nice dose of fear, go there. It's a whole listing of things to be afraid of on a daily basis. That bastard refreshes this sheet of stuff to be terrified of. It's fantastic. You'll definitely find something there that's really going to make you feel scared. It's good stuff. High grade fear. He is a true fear dealer on the level of goddamn Scarface. That son of a bitch is putting out the good shit, man. But there's other places you can go. Reddit World News, any of the news sources, they've got some nice things for you to be afraid of there. But the main thing is this. As long as you realize the fact that you're getting off on the stuff, as long as you realize that you've made the decision to use a drug that the majority of the planet are completely unconsciously addicted to, which is the drug of information, fear information, then I think it's totally okay. The problem happens when you actually start believing that that stuff that you're looking at is representative of what's really happening, rather than it being just one tiny sliver of the great spectrum of experience that is happening all over this planet right now. There's so many other things that are happening that don't involve Islamic terrorists blowing people up, or the Turkish soldiers blasting a Russian plane out of the sky. There's so many other things going on right now. Millions of orgasms are happening at any given second. You can guarantee that. All over the planet, all kinds of good orgasms, bad orgasms, medium orgasms, tantric orgasms. There's orgasm storms raging around this planet right now. And not just orgasms, there's all kinds of other wonderful things happening. Perfect states of inebriation. People having mind-expanding ayahuasca and psilocybin experiences. People forgiving their friends and their family. There's mothers holding children right now, loving them as though they had fallen out of the mouth of God into their crib. That's happening right now. And there's all kinds of other incredible things, little moments of people bringing each other blankets when they're cold, or someone who's giving socks to the homeless, or stuff you'll never hear about. People giving their organs away to other people who they don't know. That happens a lot more than you probably think. There's all kinds of invisible, anonymous acts of charity that you'll never hear about. There's also incredible batches of LSD being whipped up in the secret laboratories of the planet by alchemists who aren't interested in making money, but actually have the intention of detonating these psychedelic bombs in the consciousness of our species in the hopes of awakening us to the fact that we are all one consciousness manifesting on this planet in the form of all these individual little towers of meat with names and social security numbers, depending on where you live. There's so many things going on. Now, I wasn't thinking about this before my interview with Jack Kornfield, Lucifer. I actually went into this interview with a very similar question that you posted. That was my intention. I wanted to ask him about terror. I wanted to ask him about all of the crazy stuff happening in the world, because I did this interview after the French attacks, the attacks in Paris. But because Jack Kornfield is one of the great Buddhist teachers alive today, he realigned me with the skillfulness of some kind of master spiritual chiropractor. And hopefully what you'll hear in this interview is me starting the way you seem to, with the state of consciousness that you're in right now, Lucifer, and ending a little more hopeful, a little more happy, and reminded of the fact that this world that we live in is a very beautiful place. And it's that much more beautiful because folks like Jack Kornfield populate it. And from time to time, they scoop fear-drunk lunatics like me out of the ocean of terror and hang out with us on the shores of love, my friends. It's true. Sounds cheesy. The shores of love. Sounds like an awful song, but it's true. That's what these guys do. They're there for us. Kornfield's there for you. Anytime you want, you can download one of his audiobooks. I love A Path with Heart. You can check out many of his other incredible books. You can go to one of his retreats. He's there for you. You don't have to live in the anxiety. That's the point. That's what I was reminded of in this interview. I feel so lucky that I get a chance to spend time with people like Jack Kornfield, and none of this stuff could happen if not for you guys. So one thing I am very thankful for on this Thanksgiving is the fact that this podcast exists and that you guys are listening to it. And I hope you're all having a great Thanksgiving, and I really hope that you spend a little bit of time tuning out the orc drums and the goblin chatter that is spraying out of the news at us right now, and spend a little bit of time recognizing that you exist in one of the most beautiful and amazing times in all of human history. And that anytime you want to, you can pick up the remote control of consciousness that is completely at your command and switch channels from the channel of fear, insecurity, anger, loneliness, jealousy, ambivalence, or entropy, and just experiment from time to time with seeing what it's like on what's going on some of the other channels. Because there's some pretty amazing stuff going on these other channels, and it's teachers like Jack Kornfield who remind us of that. We're going to jump right into this interview, but first, some quick business. This episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by the Wizards of Light over at the Gleaming Towers of Squarespace.com. Your website doesn't have to be the crab lice suckling in the undergirders of the World Wide Web. Your website doesn't have to be something reminiscent of one of the beings in an H.R. Giger painting. Your website doesn't have to be like some kind of malformed mole protruding off of the calf of a grandfather powdering his dick in a gym. Your website could be something as sublime, sweet, and perfect as a forest fawn. Your website could be like the eyelashes of a baby unicorn. Something wonderful. Something that everyone wants to stare upon. Go to squarespace.com and start building a simple, powerful, beautiful website. It's only $8 a month and you get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for a year. They have a responsive design. Your website scales to look great on any device. Every website comes with a free online store, and they have a feature that allows you to set up beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. You can start a trial with no credit card and start building your website today. Just go to squarespace.com, use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first purchase and to show support for the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast and to show support for yourself. You really can do anything you want. This is the most amazing time in human history. Don't you realize that in the old days, if you wanted to create a store where you could sell your sweaty, stinky socks, you had to actually build the store, rent a space. Now you can actually have a presence on the internet that reaches the entire planet for a very small amount of money. $8 a month is really nothing. And the fact that you can try it out without a credit card is even better, just to make sure that it works. I've tested their customer support. It totally works. I know the folks over at Squarespace. They're wonderful people, and they're one of our longest sponsors. And the bottom line is, I don't advertise anything on the podcast that I haven't tried out, that I haven't used myself, and Squarespace is fantastic. I've got other stuff going on with Squarespace. I'm not sure how much of it I'm allowed to announce yet, but a lot of cool things are cooking with these web gods, and I hope you'll show your support by heading over to squarespace.com and creating a brand new website over there using offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. We're also brought to you by Casper.com. My apologies to the darlings over at Casper. I've been giving the wrong offer code out. Go to Casper.com/family hour to get $50 off your brand new mattress. There is no need for you to get sucked into the terrible mattress maze offered in these mattress warehouses. You don't have to get hypnotized by a mattress salesman trying to sell you an overpriced fuck pad that's just going to fall apart within the first few months of you laying upon it. It's happened to me. I've had 100% mattress failure on a very expensive mattress that I bought. It just started caving in, bottoming out. It was awful. And I was contacted by Casper, and I sleep on a Casper mattress to this very day. But I'm living with my girlfriend now, Casper, if you're listening to this, and I need a king-size bed. We have a poodle, a chihuahua, a cat, and a girlfriend, and me. Oh, that's the biosphere of my house. And at night, we all climb upon a queen-size mattress and lay there like some gelatinous heap of love, watching Netflix on what needs to be a bigger bed. Why, oh why, did I not get a king-size Casper mattress? I must have been out of my mind. If you're looking for a new mattress and don't want to end up getting horrified by the terrible process that you have to go through when you go to any of these mattress places, why not go to Casper.com/family hour and check out their mattresses? They've got their twin size mattress costs $500, $600 for a twin extra large, $750 for a full size, $850 for a queen size, and $950 for a king size mattress. Buying a Casper mattress is completely risk free. They offer free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Statistically, laying on a bed for 4 minutes in a showroom has no correlation to whether it's the right bed for you. That's why Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality you spend a third of your life on. They say love is a verb. And if you really want to show someone you love them, here's an idea. Get rid of that old mattress that you've been making love on for the last 4 years. That mattress that when you pull the sheets off looks like some kind of terrible yellowed Rorschach test created by an ejaculatory clown, and replace it with a sweet, pristine, beautiful, brand new mattress, unsullied and untainted by the seminal and vaginal fluids of your past lovers and friends. Get a fresh mattress. Start new. It's one of the few things in the world where you can really wipe the slate clean. Get that jizz off your old John Wayne Gacy level disgusting mattress. Your mattress, you wonder why there's predatory birds flying over your house in the day? It's because they smell the musky stink coming off of your old mattress. Get a brand new mattress. You want coyotes howling at your door? You're going to have raccoons in your house because they smell that tangy cranberry stank coming off your old mattress. Get a new one. Go to Casper.com/family hour. You get to try it out for 100 days. And if you don't like it, just send it back. You have nothing to lose. If you want some $16,000 mattress woven together from the hair of deceased Catholic saints, then you're welcome to do that, but why not try a Casper out first? See if you like it. Let me know what you think. I sleep on one to this very day. Yes, I do. Casper.com/family hour. Give them a shot. And for you sweeties over at Casper who may be listening, I'm sorry for using the wrong offer code in the last episode. And also, can you please send me a king-size mattress? Please. I need a bigger mattress. I can't sleep at night. Animals crawling over my body. Dog asses in my face. Friends, we've got a serious tour coming up, man. This is the biggest tour I've ever done. We've got a full-scale tour bus and everything. And I'm going to be going through everywhere. I'm going to be in Columbus, Cleveland, Pennsylvania. On the website, the only tickets that we've put on sale so far are in Boston. But there's lots of other shows coming up. Lots of other shows. I'm going to be in New York. I'm going to announce these dates. They're going to be on sale soon. I just want to let you know that this spring, I'm going to be coming through your land in a massive tour bus. I'm really excited about it. So keep your eyes peeled for that. There's lots of ways that you can support this podcast. And one of the best ways to do it is to use our Amazon portal, which is located at duncantrussell.com. Christmas is upon us, and as we all know, the only way to truly show someone you love them is to buy them something. That's the only way. Don't let any of these hippies fool you into thinking that you could do something that involves listening or being in the moment with them or being vulnerable to them or forgiving them or blah, blah, blah. If you want to really love somebody, buy them some plastic. That's what Gandhi used to say. And if you're going to buy them some plastic, the best plastic dispensary on this planet is Amazon.com. The truth of the matter is sometimes plastic can actually change your life. I'm currently using a Zoji Rushi rice cooker. You got to try this out. These things are amazing. I was kind of skeptical about the glory of rice cookers, but no more. There's something amazing about being able to dump 2 cups of rice into a machine with a perfectly measured out water levels. It's hard to explain, but the point is now I have delicious, perfect brown rice whenever I want it because I cook it in the Zoji Rushi in the morning and it's there all day. So you end up with these really healthy meals because rice is kind of a pain in the ass to cook and it's hard to get right. I'm sure some of you are rolling your eyes at that, but I've had rice problems, deep, terrible rice problems since childhood. But if you have a supply of rice on hand, and just some broccoli and a steamer and some soy sauce, you can start making these really healthy, delicious meals. Black beans, you just have the rice cooker keeps it warm all day long. It's awesome. And if you want one of these rice cookers, why not go through our portal located in the comments section of any of these podcasts? Bookmark the portal, and anything you buy from Amazon, they give us a very small percentage of. We also have a shop located at duncantrussell.com with lots of shirts, mugs, and we are getting some new shirts in soon, hopefully in time for the holidays. I'm working on it, guys. All right, that's it. Enough of an intro. Let's dive right into this podcast. Jack Kornfield is an author and Buddhist teacher who trained as a Buddhist monk in the monasteries of Thailand, India, and Burma. He is the author of one of my favorite books on Buddhism, A Path with Heart, but he has also written many other books, including After the Ecstasy, The Laundry, teachings of the Buddha, seeking the heart of wisdom, living Dharma, a still forest pool, Buddha's little instruction book, The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness and Peace. You can find all these at jackcornfield.com. And you can also, if you love him, you should go to one of his retreats or check out his podcast, which is located at mindpodnetwork.com. And they're the folks who made this possible, along with Dustin over at Feral Audio, who let me record this over at their super fancy Feral Audio Studios. So much thanks to you over at mindpodnetwork.com and Feral Audio. And of course, a huge thanks to Jack Kornfield for coming on the show. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Jack Kornfield. But first, you know, I do want to say something kind of sappy and sentimental, which is that I can't believe how lucky I am that somehow I get to hang out with you intermittently recording these conversations.
And Ram Dass and Sharon Salzberg and
yeah,
all the old...
I can't believe how lucky I am. I you know, we were talking earlier about another form of luck that I have, which is that I have this amazing girlfriend, but also on top of that, I just feel something that isn't, I don't know if you call it gratitude, but more of a kind of dreamy, weird deja vu feeling that I even get to have these conversations with you. So thank you very much for spending this time with me and letting us have these talks.
It's a pleasure, Duncan. And we met at the Ram Dass retreat.
Yep.
Which was a kind of field of extraordinary love, but also a kind of an invitation to consciousness that was so much bigger than our ordinary day-to-day life, to the vastness of the ocean and the sky, and the kind of timelessness that Ram Dass invites people into when he says, be here now. It's not just the moment of here now, but that the moment contains everything.
Right.
And it happened to contain Duncan Trussell, which is really cool. Strange Dharma comic and, you know, all kinds of other wonderful things.
Yeah. You know, that's something when I was thinking about what to talk about, one of the things that comes to mind is Jack Kornfield, is, in my mind, you're one of the great Buddhist teachers alive today. And Ram Dass is one of the great teachers, one of the great spiritual teachers alive today. And the Dalai Lama, another great teacher. And I was thinking a lot about these teachers and what they all have in common. And what came to me is that it seems that you have all gone all in. You've put all the chips on the table. There is no more doubt. There is no more sense of that perhaps this is a preposterous path to have taken. You seem to be fully committed to this role and to this lifestyle. And then when I think of me, and other people that I know, we kind of drift. I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita, I think the term was, you drift like a riven cloud. We just sort of float through the sky, lost in our own lives and our minds, occasionally coming into contact with the teachings, temporarily meditating for a week or a month or a couple of months, and then it's gone again. How do you maintain the level of consistency and the level of conviction that you and all these other great teachers seem to radiate?
Well, first, thank you for putting me in the august company of Ram Dass and the Dalai Lama in that.
I think it's fair to say.
I talked to my daughter. She'll straighten you out about that. Well, she looked at me and said, come on, Dad, it's time for you to go meditate. Chill out. But anyway, you know, I think you've expressed a kind of ideal. It's an important question But you expressed it in a way that could be confusing to you and other people, that's sort of idealistic, like, oh, we're all in and then everything's hunky-dory.
Right.
Or some shit like that. When in fact, everybody that I know who's the kind of spiritual professionals, if you will, in the industry,
right,
have gone through cycles where they're underneath, they're deeply committed to spiritual life, but where they have their own self-doubts, or they have their doubts about, are these teachings working right, or they're the right for me or for other people, or, you know, or just going through hard times. And the notion that it's supposed to be consistent and you're just all in and you're having this great spiritual life or something like that. Maybe there's some people like that, and I, you know, that's lovely. But that's not the norm. I was in the Miami airport, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, Jack, is that you? And I say, yeah. And he says, I don't, you remember me? I sat the retreat in 3-month course in, silent 3-month meditation course at your center in Massachusetts back in 1978. I thought, so what's your name? And he told me his name, and I had a vague memory of him. And then he looked at me and he said, you know, I practiced very ardently for a while. I was really into it when I was younger. He said, but then it slipped away. I built a business and family and all these kinds of things. And I would have thought I was kind of a failed meditator, basically. And then last year I had a heart attack, and they were wheeling me into the, down the hall and, you know, into the scans and the surgery and all those kinds of things. And it all came back. There I was, and I thought I might die, and I came back to my own mindfulness and self-compassion and awareness of the body and the breath, and then of something bigger and how to hold all this, he said. And it was amazing. It was all there. And I just wanted to tell you that. And I loved meeting this guy, because there's some way in which you're not a failed practitioner. It's in there. It's as close as your own strange name, like Duncan Trussell. It is. And we know it. We all had the experience, you know, walking in the mountains or making love or listening to an amazing piece of music or sitting with someone when they're giving birth or when someone's dying, and you go, whoa, this whole game of incarnation is amazing and mysterious. And I'm a part of it all in some sacred way. And we all know it. And then we go about our kind of quotidian pedestrian days, checking off things on our to-do list and messing with the traffic and getting messed with by the traffic and stuff, and forget that. But something deep in us knows it. So I don't see it as that, you know, it's the lost sheep. It's actually too late for you, Duncan.
I know.
You've already started. It's, you know, and that part of you that remembers who you really are, that you're part of something vast and timeless, already started to wake up.
Well, yeah, you know, I want to believe that, but this is actually, I found this, I wanted to read this to you, because you, as part of teaching, read these beautiful poems. So I wanted to read this poem, which is not, I don't know if you'd call it as inspirational, but it's definitely beautiful, is the poems that you read. And because it kind of reminds me of those of us, it reminds me of those of us who are kind of in between the waking up thing that you're talking about. Pre-heart attack, pre-disaster, those of us lost in traffic, those of us lost on the internet, those of us lost watching The View, drifting around. I'm sure you've heard this before. It's from the poem The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Do you know?
I do know that. T.S. Eliot, while he was still at Harvard as an undergraduate.
Oh, my God. This is what makes me think of this.
Will I wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled? Go for it.
That's so funny.
Do I dare eat a peach?
The exact thing. So I'm just going to read to you what I had prepared. I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves blown back. When the wind blows the water white and black, we have lingered in the chambers of the sea by sea girls wreathed with seaweed red and brown till human voices wake us and we drown. I'm in the drowning part. I'm in that part. You know, you're at retreats all the time. You go to these retreats, you give these teachings. We leave these retreats and are instantly assailed and assuaged by this insanity of human life. And honestly, though I love to believe the awakening stuff, I think that from time to time I feel what you could call despair, absolute loneliness, and a sense that there will never be a real moment of actual authentic peace in my life. And that's when I begin to question everything that you and all of my other teachers have told me. And so I wonder, what is the solution to that? And how do you emerge from the place where you are drowning in the awfulness of human existence?
Thank you for the, T.S. Eliot poem.
My pleasure.
And the despair and the awfulness of humanity and the fact that you're completely lost. And a lot of what you're lost in is also doubt, like, how do I live this stupid life? And things aren't working. Who am I? And, you know, all of that. And, of course, the way out is through, as they say, is not to take that away, but to say, oh, this is the doubting mind.
Hmm.
This is the despairing mind. Everybody has it. You don't think that Gandhi had despairing moments in the middle of taking down the British Empire?
Right.
You don't think the Dalai Lama has despairing moments when he looks at what's happened to the Tibetan people? You don't think Aung San Suu Kyi in Burma has despairing moments when she sees the violence that's been growing between, you know, different ethnic groups in the country? Anybody whose eyes are open and who's human also carries their measure of despair. And part of what's true is that grief, which is really the outcome of despair, grief is holy. It means you actually allow your heart to be touched. And you go, even if you're going, oh my God, what are we going to do? It means you're actually paying attention in some deep way. And it turns out that accepting that suffering is like this. This is the first noble truth of the Buddha, that there is suffering in the world. And I wish that it weren't so, but that would be a fanciful world, that there actually is suffering.
Yes.
But that's only the first noble truth. So you're seeing it. You're actually having a deep spiritual realization. This sucks.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm lost.
Right.
And I'm drowning. And then you start to realize that you can breathe underwater. It's an amazing thing. Zen Master Suzuki Roshi put it this way. He said, when you realize the fact that everything changes and find your composure in it, then you find yourself in nirvana or in liberation or something like that. And what he was really speaking to was that the only place that you can find that moment, which you have had, by the way, he said, I'll never have a moment. Of course you've had those moments, you know, but when you're in the consciousness of despair, it feels like that's all there is. Consciousness,
yes.
It sort of seals itself off from other things. Says, this is real and nothing else is real.
Yes.
Sometimes when you're in the consciousness of making love, that feels like all there is.
Yes.
Or you're in the consciousness of you know, walking by the ocean on a beautiful day or out in the trees on a spring day. It feels like that's all there is.
Yes.
Consciousness does that. It sort of absorbs us in something.
Right.
But it's actually not the whole story. And the minute you say, oh, this is what despair feels like, this is what helplessness and hopelessness feels like, you bring in the element of awareness, of actually secretly of loving awareness, and say, this is part of being human. This is our human lot. Everybody, mm-hmm. Dalai Lama and, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh and Aung San Suu Kyi and me. And then you say, all right, if this isn't the end of the story, then what? Then what? Is it possible to bow to this, to name it and say, this is the despairing mind, this is the suffering of life? Is that all there is? And then you look around and you realize that the part of you that's witnessing it, that's naming it, that just that little tiny gesture already means that it's not all of who you are.
Right.
And that there's another part of you saying, wow, we're really in despair, aren't we?
Right.
We're really lost, aren't we? And that part is the part that's always free.
Right.
You know, you stub your toe and you go howling around the house. And then at some point you go, wow, really, that really hurt, didn't it? You know, but there's some witness that's also happening, which is the timeless awareness that when you die, you're going to be lying there, whatever state. And likely, you'll see, you'll say, wow, what a trip that life was, you know.
Right.
It's that part that can look at the whole game and say joy and sorrow, praise and blame, peace and war, you know, love and violence, you know, the deep spirituality of humanity and also the fact that human beings can harm one another and hurt one another. This is part of human incarnation. And then you decide, well, all right, I see all this. All this is in me. What do I do with it? What do I want to create? Because life is created out of you. You are life.
Right.
So, but I don't know if that's helpful.
Very. You reminded me. I always forget. I always want to write it down. I feel like I want to write it down and put it in my wallet to remember that expansiveness and that ability to recognize that you are not your despair, your anger, your sorrow.
Sure, like when you stand in front of a mirror, Duncan, and I think I talked about this before, but it's so obvious and mysterious. You look at yourself in the mirror and you notice that you've aged.
Yes.
Which is, you know, wrinkly, or it droops, or it sags, or it's got spots, or it loses its fur, or it gets fur in other places. As my friend Wes Nisker says, the hard parts become soft and the soft parts become hard, and, you know, or whatever. But the weird thing is you don't necessarily feel older.
Right.
Almost everybody knows that experience. Well, look at it, look at it. And that's because the awareness that's seeing in the mirror is not the body. You go, oh, this incarnation, it's, well, now it was a kid and an adolescent and a teen, and now it's, you know, this age, and it's changing in these ways. But the awareness, who you are, is not that body. You inhabit and you treasure it. But in that moment, you go, oh, look at how this incarnation is going.
Right. But another way to look at it might be, instead of thinking, oh, look at how this human incarnation is going, you could think, well, I'm the entire universe.
Right.
And I have a rotting tooth that is my body. And it is a cause of great pain, great suffering, great sorrow. And I'm not really sure why I'm doing it. Why am I dealing with this? If here I am, this super expansive, beautiful, infinite field of freedom, love, awareness, compassion, and empathy, why am I spending any amount of time
in human incarnation?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that human incarnation is the only place where you can eat baked Alaska.
Okay.
Human incarnation is the only place where you can, you know, pick up a starfish on the beach and toss it back into the ocean. Human incarnation is the only place in the vast galaxies of the universe where you can fall in love with another person, sort of like you and sort of mysteriously very different than you. And so for some reason, and I can't explain why, the divine, mysterious consciousness itself, whatever word you want to use for it, decides, let's do incarnation. And that's who we are. And isn't it fantastic?
Well, I mean, thank God you think it's fantastic, because if you
didn't
think
on a good day, on another day, you could be, you know, in a really terrible, you know, you could be in a prison in the worst conditions. But then there's Nelson Mandela walking out of 27 years of Robben Island prison. Think of that. Decades of prison.
Right.
With such magnanimity and graciousness that he not only changed South Africa, he changed the imagination of the whole world. They can put your body in prison,
right,
but no one can imprison your spirit.
Right. And it's almost as though that imprisonment was something that he used as an expression of love. It was something that he used to show that humans can overcome just about anything. But,
well, and you were talking about being the lost sheep, connecting these. And so this Indian, you know, sage says, go ahead, light your incense, ring your bells, call out to the gods, but watch out, for the gods will come, and they will fire up the forge and put you on the anvil and beat you until they turn brass into pure gold. And so what's true is that sometimes the grief and the despair turn into kind of holy tears. They actually turn the heart into compassion, because when you suffer, which you do,
yeah,
I can see it in your face, Duncan, and I do too. When you suffer, if you hold the suffering with some tenderness, all of a sudden you realize that it's not just your pain. It's the pain of humanity.
Yes.
It's not just yours. It's ours. It's human. And then you also start to see it's not just your love or your desire, but it's the desire. And desire is so deep because it wants to connect us all. Yes, there's, I love chocolate ice cream, or I love, but there's something so deep about love like gravity. It just connects us all in our original nature.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that.
How big is your despair? If you were to give a geography for you, I mean, let's go back. Let's not skip over this stuff.
Okay.
If you were to give a natural image for your despair, is it as big as a flood or a hurricane, you know, or the,
galaxy size?
One galaxy? I mean, you know, come on, baby, where would it be?
I'd say one galaxy.
One galaxy. Okay, so that's hundreds of millions of stars in one galaxy.
Okay.
Now, of course, we know that there are at least 200 billion galaxies. So you as a galaxy are 1/200 billionth of what we can see with our Hubble eyes.
All
okay.
Right.
But you're as big as the whole galaxy of despair. All right. So feel that. What's that like in your body to feel that you're the size of a galaxy filled with despair?
It's horrifying.
And okay, so notice that. And as you notice it, let the despair and the horrifying quality, which is really the pain of it, you know, when you say horrifying, just means that it hurts.
Yeah.
In some way.
It's an awful, it's like an aching.
And let that aching be as big as it wants to be. It's as big as the galaxy. It could spread to nearby galaxy. It can get vaster. Let the aching have space in your own consciousness now as you're paying attention. Let it get as big as it wants. And see what happens if you let it get vast, even beyond the galaxy.
It dissipates.
It dissipates. Okay, stay with me. All right, so it dissipates. And then as you allow it, which is you're making space for it to be just as it is, and it dissipates, it will turn into something else, maybe just quiet, or the darkness of, you know, space between the stars, or who knows what, or some. But notice when it dissipates, you really want to track this, then what comes?
Well, see, this is going to be the wrong answer.
It's okay. Any answer is the right answer.
Terror of the void.
Yeah, okay. Beautiful. All right. So the next thing that comes, because you want to talk about fear today anyway, so this is perfect. It's the perfect right answer. This is all quite trustworthy. All right. So you let despair and pain and suffering, vast like the galaxies, get even bigger, and then it slowly dissipates. And then there's a sense of void or emptiness coming.
Yes.
You wouldn't be afraid of the void if you weren't already starting to feel it. And now there arises fear. And fear is really the membrane between what you know and something new. When fear comes, it's like a little light goes on the dashboard that says, about to grow. Something new is coming.
Huh.
All right, so now I want you to notice the fear and see how big the fear is.
Well, I mean, we're talking, this is the
The terror, going.
It's indescribably awful,
right,
to imagine going from being a something to a nothing.
All right, so this is the fear of death. Now we're really,
yes,
we're now looking right into the eyes of the Grim Reaper, and it's not even Halloween, right?
Yeah.
Or the
yes.
Day of the Dead. Okay. So extinction and our whole sense of self dissolving.
And everyone you know dying, and everything that you ever did or that anyone ever did dissolving, yeah. And anything that could be gone, all the love that you felt for someone gone, everything completely annihilated, negated, wiped out.
Okay, so stay with me. Here we are. I get the point.
Okay.
Okay. So how this vision of the end of all things, because all things do have a beginning and an end. And now you're talking about 4.3 billion years of universe so far, and then sometime in the future, the Earth will dissolve, the sun will get so big it will subsume the whole solar system.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I mean that watching the vet inevitably putting the needle into my poodle's body to euthanize it, I mean the report from the phone call in the middle of the night. I haven't even brought it to the universal extinction level. To me,
it's the personal, that you will die and all that you love will also
How do
die.
I make this place a home, Jack? How can I feel at home here when every single thing that I love is definitely going to die? How do I find any real comfort in a world like that? And I have to be honest, to me, that it's not just terror, it's anger. That's where I start getting really angry. And the anger of something backed into a corner that it can't get out of.
And the Buddha says, in the Anguttara Nikaya, in one of these dialogues, he said, you thought that things would last, they will not. You thought that things were permanent, they are not. You thought that you would last, you will not. And this is what you're saying. This is the truth of incarnation and reality, that it actually is impermanent. And T.S. Eliot talks about it a lot, where you started in the beginning in that poem.
Yeah.
Of the inevitable change of one thing giving birth to another and that which preceded it dissolving. So you say, all right, well, how do I find a home in it? Well, clearly, your home can't be in that which changes, can it?
No.
But there you are looking in the mirror, seeing the body change, the thoughts change, the feelings change, and so forth. And there is some sense that you have in looking in the mirror that, wow, look at this incarnation. There's some sense that there is a consciousness, this mystery of consciousness, that is outside of time. Because you're not going to find the home inside of time if you want something that doesn't change. But outside of time is a timeless awareness that you also could call love. What do you think love is anyway? I mean, I hate to puncture your depression bubble a little bit. But just, you know, just playing with me. What is love? You know, where does that fit into your grim picture here?
Hmm. No, I mean, well, you know, love. Love, I recognize that there is love, and I feel love, and I'm the grim picture I'm painting. I'm just zooming in on the specific thorn that's stuck in me for
a huge thorn, not a small one,
right.
Well, the state of consciousness. It really, this is a lens that we all can use to see the world. The things that we love around us will die. The people we love, the animals we love, the things that matter, they will all die and we will die. So this is not a small thorn. This is like,
this is death
over your shoulder saying, hey, Duncan, remember I'm here.
Oh, but man, I can't let go. It's like I recognize the stuff that you're saying, mm-hmm. but I don't want, it's like a choice mm-hmm. between this very familiar, aching, intermittently interrupted by maybe some meditation practice where suddenly I start feeling good and colors are bright again and then back. But I can't. The story that you are telling and that Ram Dass tells and that the Dalai Lama tell and that of this expansiveness, it really seems horrible to me because it feels like dying before I die and letting go of every single thing that I am currently attempting to use as a habitat to make me not do the Munch, how do you say his name? The Scream, where he's got his hands on the side of his face. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, the Scream, Edvard Munch. Yeah.
Yes. So, sort of like when the dog nestles into the blanket or when you see a mouse build a nest, you're, the things that you guys are talking about, it sounds amazing after you've done it. But the disintegration of the nest, the obliteration of the safety mechanisms, It's terrifying.
Let's talk about terror, because one of the things you're doing that's really interesting, which comes out of this state, this is all a state of consciousness you're describing, is that from this state, everything is black and white. Either everything dies, you know, or I become one of those sort of spiritual people, but then I have to let everything die.
Yes.
And then that's, you know, that's a pretty bad choice.
Right.
Then you read Hafez, the wonderful Persian poet, who says, fear is the cheapest room in the house. I'd rather see you in better living conditions, right?
Yeah.
If you don't see it from the black and white perspective that despair does, it's all horrible, and if I let it go, then I become the empty void, and those are my choices.
Yes.
Exactly. Those are impoverished views of the universe, but you can have whatever views you like.
Right. Yes,
I see.
But
if you don't have that particular fantasy, then as my friend Alison Luderman, the poet, says, sun drapes a buttered scarf across your cheek. Rain shares its divine melancholy. Rose offers herself to your glance. The whole world keeps nibbling your ear like a neglected lover. So you feel like, all right, if I let this go, I won't have anything. But it turns out that it's the opposite. That if you let go of the despairing Duncan Trussell, which has made you some money as a comedian, we know this, so you know, you do have to be worried about that. Will anyone listen to me if I'm not as neurotic as I try?
This thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
This you have identified.
Who would I be? Yeah.
Exactly.
Who would I be? So we're actually talking about a professional problem here.
We're talking about a problem all across the board. We're talking about, it's a big problem. And I don't think that I'm the only one who looks at it and thinks, are you kidding me? You don't understand I love what you're saying, but how I tried.
Would I be if I wasn't depressed and despairing, and no one would listen to my podcast anyway? So keep, we're going. So you can have any identity that you choose. You know, we have this mysterious thing where we can identify as a Republican or a Libertarian or a Democrat, you know, or whatever. You can identify as a despairing person, you know, or whatever. That's fine. Whatever you like for this time in your incarnation, have a good time with it. You know, we're just talking consciousness here.
Right.
But it turns out that when you let go and when you realize, yes, everything is going to die, and here's the beautiful, horrible, amazing reality that both things are true. That even though everything is impermanent and like a dream, like a rainbow, like a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, it said, ephemeral, like a bubble in a stream. At the same time, it's also here. And you do have this love of your girlfriend, and you do have tomorrow morning's, you know, sunrise, and you do have the, you know, the fresh cooked eggs that are put on your plate. Even though you're despairing, you go to this cool cafe and you order, you know, a double latte, and then you have this wonderful breakfast platter, and you know that there are children who are hungry somewhere else on earth.
Right.
But it's also given to you to eat those fresh cooked eggs, you know, and the fresh squeezed orange juice. And that's part of the remarkable paradox that requires our heart to get so big that we can hold both the suffering and the nibbling at the ear of the unbearable beauty of this life.
Unbearable beauty, because suffering's easy. This thing you're talking about is hard.
It scares the hell out of you.
Yes.
Oh, my God, what happens if I actually love? And then it'll all be taken away. Where cue the violins, right?
Yes! It's, no, but it is.
You're talking about our human lot.
It's hard for me to enjoy. Okay, if one of my favorite kinds of days are the days where there's nothing to do all day long. You know, you have nothing to do from the morning to night, and you get this entire day to just chill out. Great mm-hmm. day. And then you can really kind of relax in that day because nothing's yeah. coming up. Okay. But when something's coming up, the day is filled with this kind of stress. And like, even though the day is fine, depending on what's coming up, it's still a kind of looming dissipation of the moment. Now, that when you come to terms with the fact that you're going to die, mm-hmm. your entire life becomes that day where you have this thing coming up that there's nothing you can do about. You've got to
die. That's an interesting state of consciousness. There's the knowing that you're going to die and that you have to let go of everything. And then, you know, you could turn it into despair. But you also could turn it into the preciousness of life. You could do different things with it.
Right.
You watch the Dalai Lama, and he will say, you know, they've taken so much from me, burned our temples, taken the sacred texts, you know, are taking away our people's right to their own religion and culture and so forth. Why should I let them take my happiness? Mm.
Well, yeah, it's true, man, but it's like an electric fence, you know, when you haven't allowed yourself to really feel love for a while, mm-hmm. and you haven't really allowed yourself to buy into the story of your life, because buying into the story equals heartbreak inevitably, and this numb terror is preferable, this numb despair preferable to that heartbreak. It really is a scary decision to make.
Well, I'm going
in a circle, and I apologize for
that. You're making an interesting circular choice. All right, listeners, you either have heartbreak or numb despair. Take your pick. That's what's on the menu this morning.
Yes, right.
I'd rather invite you to a different cafe. And it's not, I mean, maybe even the big cafe, those are on the menu, but there might be some other things on the menu, Duncan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like Alzheimer's disease.
Uh-huh, right. And terrorism in Beirut and Paris,
right,
and
right.
and
Wolf Blitzer.
Egypt, and, you know, and Syrian refugees, you know, trying to climb over fences and not having a place to, you know, have their children sleep in safety.
That's it, Jack. See, that's the
And Plato saying only the dead know the end of war.
Oh God.
And that was 2,600 years ago, and sadly, it's still true. And we tell our kindergarten, preschool kids, you know, when they're whacking each other with blocks, use your words. But somehow the grown-ups of the planet haven't really got the message yet.
So what do we do here?
What do we do?
On a personal level,
yeah.
there's the invitation that you...
So there's your beautiful, you know, love. You've got this loving relationship. And you look at her and you say, it's so despairing. I just can't even bother to care about you or anything else because I'm just going to go to sleep and never wake up. And I'm sorry. And she's saying, honey, let's go for a walk. Would you like this tea? Here, come, let me give you a kiss. And you're saying, no, I'm not going to accept any of that because I love my despair.
You just summed it up perfectly.
Yeah. Well, that's your address. I mean, it turns out in L.A. that you're actually allowed to move. But, you know, and the beautiful thing about spiritual practice is not that anybody's forced to do anything. It's just talking about the reality of consciousness. The consciousness has many dimensions to it. And, yes, there is suffering. And we would be – it would be a folly and ignorant to not acknowledge the first noble truth that they're suffering. It's not the only room in the house.
Right.
And you're worried. You know, you have terror and despair. Oh, my God, who would I be if I don't suffer? But
anger.
Let me ask you this. And anger, yeah, rage. How big is the rage?
Two galaxies,
double galaxy rage. Okay. So you feel it and you say, all right, show me how big it is. It's like nuclear, right? It could blow up galaxies. It's so enormous,
yes.
That rage. Okay. So if you allow it to be, again, as vast as the rage wants to be, how big does it get?
I can do close to back to the Big Bang.
The whole universe just exploding in rage. All right, so let it do that. There you are. The rage, the pain and the rage gets so big that it incinerates the universe in some way. And then what happens? Notice, let's let it happen for a moment. Because these things have power over us when we're afraid and we contract against them. But this is just energy of life. Let it be as big as it wants. Rage, destruction, the whole universe is gone. And see what happens then. What happens?
Well, I mean, it's just love under all that.
Huh, how weird. Duncan Trussell says this. What happened? It dissipated, and what's left, all right, I had my crappy day, and now underneath all that stuff, and even the rage comes
so
because
annoying.
You care. I know, love is really annoying.
No,
I have to say, it is annoying.
There's something about it that's annoying. You know, this reminds me, what you just did for me in that moment was amazing, and thank you for that.
I'll get my fee afterwards.
Okay,
yes,
fine.
Duncan, yeah.
But the closest thing I can compare what you just did to me, as I went through that, was when the time that I smoked DMT, and I had this experience of suddenly being just this infinite feeling of love, just this incredibly infinite feeling of love. And then when we hear the human voices and we drown, as I began to come down from the DMT trip, my first thought was, why? Have you done this to us? Here we are, trapped in matter, beneath it all, this thing you just pointed in the direction of, which is real. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. But why the other part? Why not just the sweet, sweet love? And I know
I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because you can't have birth without death. You can't have pleasure without pain. You can't have light without dark.
Right.
You can't have sweet without sour. This is the dualistic experience of coming into form.
Okay.
You cannot have birth without death.
Yeah, I get it.
That's the way the game works. And so incarnate reality is woven with the opposites, light and dark, joy and sorrow, beginning and end. And if you take away half of it, if you take away pain, you also have to take away pleasure.
I got you, man. It's so good.
So this is where we are. And then you have a choice. All right, where do you, all right, you're in the game, and then you discover, even though it's to your chagrin, that the heart is big enough and wise enough to hold the whole thing with compassion. The great heart of compassion was born in you. You say, I don't want to go there. I want to whine, and I don't hate this, and
yes.
I'm down, and so forth. You notice that. And then after a week or a decade or whatever living there, then you say, maybe there are other rooms in this house. I'm going to read you a poem.
Okay.
This is from Ellen Bass called Phone Therapy. I was relief once for a doctor on vacation and got a call from a man on a windowsill. This was New York, 12 stories up. He was going to kill himself, he said. And I said everything I could think of. And when nothing worked, when the guy was still determined to slide out that window and smash his delicate skull on the indifferent sidewalk. Do you think, I asked, you could just postpone it until Monday when Dr. Lewis gets back? And that cord that connects us, strung under the wildly busy streets and the pizza parlors and taxis and limos and women in sneakers carrying their high heels and drunks lying asleep, that endless coiled wire waited for the sound, the waves of sound. In the silence, I could feel the air slip in and out of his lungs, the moment when the motion reversed like a goldfish making its turn at the end of the tank. I matched my breath to his, slid into the water, and swam with him. Okay, he agreed. And there's something miraculous. I love the kind of intimacy of this poem, that you're really there with her and him and so forth. And he's completely lost in it. And then she says, hey, can't you just wait till the doctor comes back for you? And then finally he says, okay, he agrees.
Yeah.
And there's something remarkable about it, which is to say that we can change channels, and that part of the mysterious blessing of this human incarnation is that we have the consciousness both to be quite present for the way that things are in front of us, and pleasure and pain and gain and loss and people around us being born and people dying and so forth. And we also have the perspective rooms of how we see it. We can see it with the lens of fear or the lens of connection and interdependence. We can see it with the lens of loss, which is also true, but we can see it with the lens of love or the lens of preciousness. How amazing that we have this moment, this day, this person. Look what the universe has made for us. Yes, it's tentative, but also it's so it's so deeply alive just where we are. And so, you know,
right.
You get to pick. And I don't mean it in a light way, because I can imagine people listening who've had at times months or years of despair or anxiety, and anxiety takes over your body. It's very difficult.
Yes.
And despair can be terrible. Usually when you have a lot of despair and a lot of anxiety, it's also because you've suffered a lot before. Mostly you've had a lot of trauma, as I've had and perhaps you've had in your life, and it still clogs up the body
right.
and psyche in some way, and it makes it hard to move through the world with a sense of inner freedom.
Yeah.
But it's possible. The healing from trauma is possible. There's really good trauma attention that you can bring to release the sufferings and the abuse that so many people carry that's underneath the despair. There are ways to do that, to hold it with compassion, to allow the body to release, to find some little place of well-being that lets little step by step the release of the past and the images and stories to happen. And then you end up fresh. You walk out a little fresher and you see the child, you know, playing with their toy on the curbside, or the, you know, young man joking with each other on the other side of the street. And you see not just the despair, but the miracle of life at the same time. And that's there for us to wake up to.
Thank you so much, Jack. That was beautiful. Thank you for being a guest on the show. And it was just wonderful. Thank you. That was Jack Kornfield, everybody. Check him out at jackkornfield.com. Big thanks to squarespace.com. Go to squarespace.com and use offer code Duncan to get 10% off your first order. And go to casper.com/family hour to receive $50 towards your brand new awesome mattress. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you all have a fantastic Thanksgiving. And don't let these fear mongers scare you unless you're enjoying it. I'll talk to you next week. Hare Krishna.